Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. The president of the National Congress of American Indians continues his focus on modernizing the trust responsibility. In his annual State of Indian Nations address in Washington, D.C., Brian Gladysby says tribes must drive the change they want.
It's not enough to have a seat at the table. It's not enough to be involved in decisions. We need policies and processes that recognize tribes as true partners in governing.
The NCAI president's address, as well as the congressional response, right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A South Dakota tribal leader delivered a speech before the state legislature Thursday calling for respect in order to work together. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Jennifer Jones has more.
Cheyenne River Sioux Tribal Chairman Harold Frazier says legislators need to consider how laws will impact Native people in South Dakota before they cast their votes. He says he wants to see more job creation on the state's reservations, but those areas need better infrastructure.
So we ask you, the state, to be our partner in economic development, because we all live together in South Dakota. When we create new jobs, everyone benefits.
Frazier says health care is also a priority among tribal members. He's glad state leaders want to expand Medicaid so that children and elders can have more access to care. He says tribal leaders are fighting a suicide epidemic.
We need to ensure that there's peer-to-peer counseling in this new plan. Many of our children don't want to open up to a non-Indian, to a stranger. Instead, they feel comfortable talking, like they said, with a friend, a grandma, or an auntie. So we should be allowed to bill and collect Medicaid, because we live in high poverty areas on all of our reservations.
Frazier says meth is one of the biggest problems tribes are facing today. He says leaders are looking at fighting the issue through the law, treatment, and prevention.
We are working to strengthen our courts, our police, and our laws. We are actively recruiting law-trained lawyers, law-trained prosecutors, court personnel. We're looking at creative ways, because of our low funding, to build and establish a strong police force. We're also working with other agencies to stop the dealers and the suppliers.
Frazier called on legislators to expand police training facilities. For National Native News, I'm Jennifer Jones.
Some U.S. lawmakers vowed to work on Indian country issues in 2016. This after Thursday's State of Indian Nations address delivered in Washington, D.C. by National Congress of American Indians President Brian Gladysby. Minnesota Congresswoman Betty McCollum gave the congressional response to the speech. She pointed to successes and needs in tribal communities. Some of the successes, she says, include full contract support cost funding for the Indian Health Service and the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Challenges tribes face, she says, include active attacks on tribal sovereignty, on issues like hunting and fishing rights, and land into trust. McCollum encouraged tribal leaders to continue to advocate for their communities and to continue to engage members of Congress.
There are 567 federally recognized tribal nations. There are 535 members of Congress. So this year, adopt a member. Every tribe, pick one. Share the voices of your stories of your people. Educate their staff. Invite them out to visit your nations. Because I can tell you from personal experience, there is just no substitute for visiting a tribal community.
McCollum says she traveled to the Navajo and Hopi Nations to see the conditions of schools firsthand to get a better understanding. She also called on tribes to strengthen the role of women in leadership roles and to keep focus on Native youth and invest in their future. On the Senate side, John Barrasso, chair of the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, committed to strengthening the government-to-government relationship. The Wyoming senator says he'll advance an agenda that supports self-determination, boosts economic development, and improves health care and juvenile justice systems. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the Heard Museum, hosting the 26th Annual Hoop Dance World Championship, where you can see more than 70 talented Native hoop dancers vie for the championship title, February 13th and 14th. Details at heard.org. Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation is accepting artwork and reservations for the Alaska Native Art Auction February 18, 2016 in Anchorage, Alaska. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event. Proceeds benefit Kiwanis News Programming. Learn more at knba.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. The Isleta Pueblo runs its local elementary school for the first time in over a century. The Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes cut their unemployment rate in half. And the state of California banned a racist term for mascots. Those are among the signs of progress listed in the annual State of Indian Nations address on Thursday. The National Congress of American Indians President Brian Cladisby is a strong proponent of modernizing the trust relationship with the federal government. He mentions NCAI's work on the Tribal General Welfare Exclusion Act, the Indian Health Care Improvement Act, and the Tribal Law and Order Act, among others. We're going to hear Brian Cladisby's address and get reaction from someone who follows tribal legal policy. Let's go now to the museum in Washington, D.C. for the start of President Cladisby's address.
Good morning. I thank the Creator for bringing us together, my fellow tribal leaders, members of Congress, members of the administration, veterans of the U.S. Armed Forces, friends and partners gathered here and watching from home. Thank you for joining us for the State of Indian Nations Address. We meet at a moment of progress and promise in Indian country. Progress made possible by tribal self-determination. This administration and a growing number in Congress understand that when tribes forge their own paths, Indian country benefits and America benefits. 2 days ago, President Obama delivered his final State of the Union address to talk about America's progress. He said, and I quote, "But such progress is not inevitable. It is the result of choices we make together." This morning, I want to reflect on the progress that Indian country has made in the face of the challenges we have inherited, and recognize the promise we can seize by strengthening the self-determination that tribes have always had. When our ancestors first welcomed European settlers to this continent, indigenous nations had formed a wide range of strong and sophisticated systems of governance. The Wampanoag, the Muscogee, the Anishinaabe, the Ottawa Alliance, they all existed before colonies and states and ultimately the United States. There were six tribal nations in the Iroquois Confederacy. This might sound familiar to you. Civilian representatives chosen to serve in a central government and separate military leadership. Benjamin Franklin said in so many words, "If the six nations can do it, why can't the colonies?" This indigenous framework became America's framework. And as the U.S. government took shape, It continued to recognize the self-determination and independence of tribal nations. The Constitution puts it plainly. It gives Congress the power, and I quote, to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes. So that's with foreign nations, among states, and with Indian tribes. But our right to retain our powers of self-government is not just printed in the text of the Constitution. It has also been affirmed in laws, executive orders, and Supreme Court decisions. Thomas Jefferson wrote to President George Washington, and I quote, "Indians have full and undivided independent sovereignty as long as they choose to keep it, and this might be forever." This history isn't taught in most schools, but it should be, because the relationship with tribal governments was central to the early growth of the United States. Back then, tribal nations had a valuable resource: land. The United States declared itself to have territorial authority over our lands. And through hundreds of treaties and other agreements, tribal lands were placed in trust by the United States government. That is how the United States became our trustee. It promised to protect and uphold our right to govern ourselves, to support the right and ability of tribal governments to care for their own people, and to help us manage our remaining lands and resources in our best interests. These are not mere agreements. These promises are treaties between nations. Under the Constitution, they are the supreme law of the land and always will be. That was the beginning of our relationship. It was based on respect and full of promise, just as it is today. But our relationship hasn't always been so promising. We have inherited an anguished history that should not be ignored, but understood, so it will never be repeated again. Our history produced generations of trauma, poverty, and abuse that we are still fighting to undo. Tribes removed from their homelands, families forced across the country, lands and resources stolen, despite the guarantees of treaties, laws, executive orders, and judicial decisions. Our rights, our needs, and our hopes for the future were denied or ignored. Many thought and many hoped that tribes would disappear. They thought our cultures would vanish. They believed our people would assimilate. The way of thinking is carved deeply into the dominant American psyche. It's carved into old, outdated federal policies. It's even carved into stone. Over the Senate entrance of the United States Capitol, there is a marble frieze, a massive sculpture called The Progress of Civilization. It begins with Indians beside a grave. In the middle is a pioneer, Lady Liberty, and a soldier. It ends with waves of grain representing fertility and an anchor representing hope. Here's how the architect of the Capitol's official website describes it: Indian chief, Indian mother and child, and Indian grave represent the early days of America. That sculptor thought a grave represented the fate of tribal nations. It just goes to show he knew nothing of the resilience of Native people. We have not disappeared, and we are not victims. We have persevered. We are survivors, and we are growing stronger every day. We are thriving 21st century governments built on self-determination. Yes, our ancestors were central to America's early days, but we are also central to America's present and vital to its future. Progress is not built on the graves of our people. It is built with our people and by our people. I would like to take a moment to recognize those great leaders of the past from Indian country: Ernie Stevens Sr., Wilma Mankiller, Wendell Chino, Joe Dela Cruz, and so many others. Through their efforts, tribal self-determination returned to the forefront of federal policy. In 1970, President Nixon addressed a joint session of Congress and said, I quote, "On virtually every scale of measurement, employment, income, education, health, the condition of the Indian people ranks at the bottom." He goes on to say that the time has come to break decisively with the past and create the conditions for a new era in which the Indian future is determined by Indian acts and Indian decisions. In 1970, President Nixon urged Congress to empower tribal governments to do what is best for tribal citizens. And 46 years later, we have proven the wisdom of his conviction. The Pueblo of Isleta, it now runs its local elementary school, for the first time in over a century, taking it over from the federal government. In those hallways and classrooms, Isleta students are now immersed in their language, their values, and their traditions. Likewise, the Confederated Tribes of Umatilla have reshaped their child welfare system to strengthen families. Now, today, 70% more Umatilla children are thriving with their families in their homes and their communities. The Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes developed new skills training, job placement, and professional mentoring programs. The impact? They cut their unemployment rate in half. As one caseworker put it, when adults are productive in a family, it makes for happy children. And the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa have an assisted living residence where an elder can lead an independent life in the comfort of her or his own community and culture. This is what we see after 46 years of progress under tribal self-determination. Slowly but surely, America is relearning who we are and what we are capable of. Outside of government, a tide of respect is building. Leading companies are engaging with us, partnering with us, and standing with us. Adidas. They recently announced it would offer funding and design talent to help schools choose new, more respectful mascots for their athletic teams. Already today, nearly 100 schools have reached out to Adidas. Meanwhile, the state of California banned the R word, the name of the Washington football team. Yes. They banned the R word in public schools. And in my state, the Seattle Times did the same in its newspaper, refusing to print that racist name again. I urge other states and companies to join them as they see us for who we truly are. Today, we are growing our economies, preparing students to succeed, delivering high-quality health care, and solving the unique challenges facing tribal communities. Today, we are proving that our governments are far more effective than other governments in meeting the needs of our people. That was the promise our elders dreamed of back in 1970, and that was the vision that President Nixon saw back in 1970. But if we want to make self-determination the prevailing federal policy in the 21st century, we have much more work to do. We need to modernize the trust relationship. We need to replace antiquated laws and regulations and policies that trust and empower tribes to govern. We need a relationship based not on paternalism and control, but on deference and support. A partnership where tribes continue to meet their own challenges and chart their own path forward. It's not enough to have a seat at the table. It's not enough to be involved in decisions. We need policies and processes that recognize tribes as true partners in governing. Because at the end of the day, Indian country is the source of solutions that work for Indian country.
And that's NCAI President Brian Cladisby speaking Thursday at the museum in Washington, D.C. We'll hear the remainder of his State of Indian Nations address in just a moment, but we wanted to pause and get some perspective on what we've heard so far. If there's anything you would like to add, call us right now. Our phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE, and anytime throughout the hour. If you would like to share your response, you can also send us a tweet. Our Twitter handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And now joining us from Tahlequah, Oklahoma, is Diane Hammonds, and she is an attorney with Campbell and Tiger and full-time faculty member at Northeastern State University in Tahlequah. She's a citizen of the Cherokee Nation, and it's our pleasure to have her on the line with us today. Hello, Diane.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
And Diane, we heard some great words coming to us from President Cladisby there, thinking about the state of our Indian nations. We've heard President Cladisby mention the trust responsibility pretty much every year in his address. And we're asking you, have you seen any progress in what he calls modernizing the trust relationship and responsibility? Your thoughts, Diane?
You know, I don't want to be a naysayer because we have seen so much progress in the past few years. But as he said, there is work to be done. You know, it seems that for every two steps forward, we take one step back. There is so much to be done to undo all those years of paternalism and, you know, the bureaucratic imperialism that the federal government engaged in towards tribes. You know, we are not to be treated like minor wards that the court the court language used, you know, in the 19th century. We are mature, responsible, sophisticated governments, and we need to be treated as such.
And I thought it was real interesting how he started off to really make his point that sometimes we're forgotten, taking it back to the early days of thinking, you know, Native Americans in graves, not existing, something of the past. How did that move you, Diane?
You know, that's certainly true. In Oklahoma, I tell my students this all the time, you don't realize how unusual it is. There are many people in the United States today that think that all Indians are dead, that Indian tribes don't exist anymore, and that if we do exist, we all live in teepees somewhere way out west. That is true. I mean, it's sad but true. There's so much education that needs to go on.
Thanks for that. And I know that also links to some of his comments about Native imagery and the push against racist mascots that he also mentioned in his speech. Something that also stood out is when he said we need to create new conditions for the future with Native acts and decisions. I thought that was interesting to hear. As we move into another year and also get ready for a new administration, you know, within a year's time, that's what we're going to be talking about and thinking about. Diane, we are getting close to the break here, but is there anything else you'd like to share about what stood out to you in this speech?
One thing that really stood out to me in the speech and the response was the call to action, how much it is our responsibility to reach out to our state and federal officials and educate them. You know, so much of the bad acts or the neglect that come from the outside governments is just based on ignorance, and it's all of our responsibility to try to combat that.
All right. Thanks for that, Diane. Something else that stood out is when President Gillespie said it's more than just having a seat at the table. And I think for so long we've heard that quote coming from a lot of folks who are working in, you know, in improving that trust, responsibility and relationship. It's been we need to have a seat at the table, and making that statement of it needs to be more than a seat. We need to be involved. What about you? Anything in what you heard so far in the first part of the speech that really stood out? Maybe something that you can apply to your own tribal community? Share your thoughts with us today. Our phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And if anything you heard compares to maybe some of what you heard earlier this week with President Barack Obama giving his State of the Union address, you can share your thoughts on that too. Phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. And what does it take to bring some of this progress that President Gillespie is calling for? All thoughts and opinions are welcome. Get at us at 1-800-996-2848. And of course, you can also send your thoughts to us on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE. We'll continue with the speech after the break. Half of all the people with glaucoma don't even know they have it. The National Eye Institute warns the disease can steal up to 40% of a person's vision before it's ever diagnosed. Doctors call glaucoma the sneak thief of sight. What exactly is it and what causes it? Join me, Tara Gatewood, and our eye experts for a discussion on glaucoma on the next Native America Calling.
Yeah. Kiwanek Broadcast Corporation announces the Alaska Native Art Auction, taking place February 18, 2016, in Anchorage, Alaska. This one-of-a-kind event includes artwork from the Alaska Native community. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event. If you would like to contribute art, reserve a table, or learn about sponsorship, visit knba.org. Proceeds benefit National Native News.
You're connected to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Mislata Pueblo, and we are moving into our second half. We're listening to Brian Cladisby, president of the National Congress of American Indians, deliver the annual State of Indian Nations Address. And we want to say a special hello to our listeners in El Cerrito, California, hearing today's address on KECG 1 World 1 Radio. And the first part of his speech, President Cladisby focused on several issues, including community security, economic equality, education, health, and many other things. And if you'd like to make a comment on his words, send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we're going to go ahead now and move into more of his words. We're going to listen to the second part of his speech. And here is President Cladisby.
During this administration, we have worked on a bipartisan basis to fix some of the things that were broken, built on what works, and create what is needed. There are countless examples. We fought for governmental parity by passing the Tribal General Welfare Exclusion Act unanimously, so that when we receive a basic tribal governmental service, it's not taxed as extra income. We fought for health security by passing the Indian Health Care Improvement Act so we could strengthen preventative care and modernize tribal care networks. We fought to restore our jurisdiction by passing the Tribal Law and Order Act so tribes can more effectively investigate crimes, prosecute criminals, and strengthen public safety. We fought to protect Native women by strengthening the Violence Against Women Act, empowering tribes to prosecute any lawbreaker, Native or not, who commits domestic violence on tribal lands. We fought to empower tribal control over tribal lands by partnering with the Department of the Interior to amend leasing and right-of-way regulations. I could go on and on. While there are many legal and ethical reasons to strengthen tribal self-determination, there is also a practical reason. It works. President Obama has certainly embraced this concept, as President Nixon did. We expect the next president and the next Congress to work with us to build on this progress. In this election year, I invite any candidate of any party, come to Indian Country, see for yourself. Tribal nations are building brighter futures for their citizens and all Americans. While Indian Country is still recovering from generations of damaging policies, more than four decades of tribal self-determination have launched our resurgence. Today, tribal nations are innovating and leading the way. With the 2016 election season well underway, the national dialogue is taking shape. I want to touch on four important areas where tribes are contributing to that dialogue: community security, economic equality, education, health and wellness, and climate change. These are challenges that affect every American, Native and non-Native. There are areas where tribal nations have made significant progress, and our entire nation can as well. Let's start with community security. The Mississippi Band of Choctaw Indians. They created a robust judicial system that incorporates traditional Choctaw values. Preserving the peace and respecting personal dignity. Their system features special teen and healing to wellness courts that are strengthening their community. It's one of many examples from decades of tribal government success in building capable systems to enforce our laws and administer justice. America can build on this progress by providing better alternatives to incarceration, well-grounded rehabilitation, and most of all, effective crime prevention. Together, let's create restorative justice centers based on Native concepts and Native values. The recent decision by the Justice Department to accept jurisdiction of the Mille Lacs Ojibwe under the Tribal Law and Order Act is a great step toward improving public safety and addressing the problems caused by Public Law 280. But our job is still not done. There are so many more reservations that need this federal help with law enforcement, particularly in California. We call for reauthorization of the Tribal Law and Order Act. Congress should fully fund important juvenile justice programs, efforts to collect accurate and relevant data, and preventative service for all families in Indian Country. Today, Native and women and children, they experience the highest rates of violence in the country. Tribes need full authority to protect them from harm caused by non-Indians on tribal lands. Across America, states and territories receive direct assistance from the Crime Victims Fund. And it's time that tribes do too. Working together, we can secure our communities. Second, let's talk about economic equality. Tribes are building more equitable and more robust economies. Take the tribes in the Idaho region. Five tribal nations are among the tribe's top employers. They boost Idaho's economy by more than $650 million a year, supporting twice as many workers as they employ directly. It goes to show that when tribes are empowered to govern, our communities and our neighbors are safer, healthier, and more prosperous. America can build on this progress by empowering tribal governments to eliminate the gaps that persist in income, jobs, and education. Tribes should be able to collect taxes without placing extra burdens on local businesses. We call on the Department of Interior to amend the Indian Trader Regulations, eliminate dual taxation in Indian Country, and empower tribes to invest in the infrastructure and services that make economic development possible. In addition, tribes must be able to issue tax-exempt bonds. They are an indispensable tool that every other modern government uses to seed private sector growth. Tribal governments must be treated as the same as state and local governments on labor issues. And we must ensure that all tribes can restore their local land bases. And I want to thank this administration for partnering with us to achieve this goal. Third, Tribes are looking after the education, health, and wellness of their communities. Education is a promise made in exchange for our land. We have more work to do. To ensure that tribal governments are directing the education of their youth, especially on schools located on tribal lands, we can do this by incorporating tribal culture and language into the classroom, by acknowledging the role of tribal education departments in Indian education, and by ensuring that students have adequate, safe, and modernized schools and environments in which to learn and thrive. By working together, we can give every child a chance to succeed so that students like Dakota Brown can achieve their hopes and dreams. Wellness is also critical to achievement. Look at the Chickasaw Nation's Medical Center's cutting-edge Diabetes Care Center. Its holistic health and preventative care programs are providing a model for clinics everywhere. America can build on this progress with investments that strengthen the physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional health of every tribal community. For more than a decade, Nike's N7 Fund and others have partnered with us to support fitness programs. But more can be done. We are asking the federal government to permanently authorize the special diabetes program for Indians so that tribal communities can continue to combat this disease. At home, my own Swinomish tribe, very proud that we recently became the first tribe in the lower 48 to bring oral health care to our people through dental therapists. We commend Alaska Natives for leading the way, for being the first to do this, and I am confident that others will follow our lead. Broadly speaking, America needs to do more of what works and less of what doesn't work. When funding through the Indian Health Service hits delays, it creates uncertainty for clinics, hospitals, staff, and patients. We call on Congress to provide advanced appropriations for the Indian Health Service. We also call on both the administration and Congress to relieve our communities of the financial burden they will bear under the Affordable Care Act's employer mandate. This simple fix will go a long way to secure the health of our citizens and make sure our kids grow up in healthy communities. Last, but certainly not least, is the threat of global climate change, which threatens not only food security, but all humanity. Some deny this threat even exists, but Indian country is on the front lines. We have seen it. Our tribal scientists and elders are documenting rising tides in the Arctic, altered migration patterns, unpredictable harvest times, and the worst droughts in recorded history. Native scientists and policymakers are working to address these challenges and prevent even worse calamities. Nations from Blue Lake Rancheria and the St. Regis Mohawk tribe are crafting ambitious plans to limit their carbon footprint and reverse the impacts of climate change on their lands. And in Paris recently, Tribal leaders were proud to take their rightful place among leaders of nations. They shared their scholarship and their indigenous knowledge and helped the world reach a historic agreement. We ask for the establishment of a permanent climate adaptation task force in collaboration with tribal leaders. In discussions about how to mitigate the effects of climate change, manage natural resources, and protect our sacred places, Native people stand ready to serve as experts and partners. Together, we can combat climate change. If we consider all we're achieving today, at every level of government, more and more leaders are seeing that the path to a brighter future for America runs through Indian country. I can only imagine how much further we'll go as the next class of American legislators and policymakers further strengthen tribal self-determination. But let's be honest, progress will not continue on its own. We must drive it in the halls of our governments, in our relationships with our communities, and in voting booths across the country. This is how we honor those who came before us and those who will follow us. You know, I think about my father, who is 82 years old. His Indian name is Kelkaltsut, Kelkaltsut. His great-grandfather was also named Kelkaltsut. And he signed the Point Elliott Treaty for our tribe. When you think about it, and when I think about my grandchildren, the seventh generation since the signing of that treaty by Kelkaltsut, my father is 82. He's the great-grandfather to my grandchildren. His great-grandfather signed that treaty in 1855. When you put it in perspective, that's not that long ago. So much has changed in that time. This is the question before us today. Where do we want Indian country to be in another seven generations? How about 70 generations? What progress will we make to help them achieve their promise? It is up to us, all of us, just as it always has been. Thank you for your time. May the Creator bless you, bless the United States of America, and bless Indian country. Da'a Dubj. Thank you.
And that was NCAI President Brian Cladisby speaking Thursday at the museum in Washington, D.C., and that is this year's State of Indian Nations Address. Is there anything you'd like to comment on? Send us a tweet right now at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And President Cladisby talked about many things, including our economy, education, health and wellness, climate change, and also security of our Native communities. Share your thoughts on what you heard. Again, you can send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And you can also send emails to comments at NativeAmericaCalling.com. There was also a response to this speech on Thursday. Minnesota DFL Congresswoman Betty McCollum gave the congressional response afterwards. She's the co-chair of the Native American Caucus, and she said Congress supports tribal nations, but still needs work on strengthening relationships with Native people and Native youth, and that tribal leaders should do their best to hold Congress accountable. Let's hear some of what she had to say that day.
We have worked on a bipartisan basis along with President Obama to substantially increase funding for the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Indian Health Service. And we've done that even as budget caps have forced flat funding across many other federal agencies. And our investments in the new Tihawe initiative will strengthen support for Native children and families. Greater funding for tribal courts will help your nations build the capacity for the new authority given under the Violence Against Women Act to seek justice for victims in your communities. After more than a decade, we have finally completed the 2004 list of Bureau of Indian Education schools in desperate need of replacement. The fact that thousands of American Indian children are forced to learn in substandard BIE school buildings is unacceptable. So we're working on a plan to turn BIE school facilities into safe, modern, welcoming schools that your child and every American child deserves.
And that is Representative Betty McCollum from Minnesota giving the response to the State of Indian Nations. And folks, if you'd like to refer to this address today, either from President Gladys B. or Betty McCollum, we're going to go ahead and add that audio to our website. You can always find us at NativeAmericaCalling.com. Let's go ahead. We have a caller and hear some responses on this. Let's say hello to Catherine in Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening to KUNM. Catherine, thank you for your call and your thoughts.
Just the same that was to listen to.
All right, Catherine, hang tight. We're having a hard time hearing you. Again, folks, if you'd like to give your thoughts, 1-800-99-NATIVE is the number. While we're checking in with Catherine, let's bring back Diane Hammonds. She's an attorney with Campbell and Tiger and a full-time faculty member at Northeastern State University in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. And she's a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. Diane Hammonds, thank you for being with us. And we heard a lot in his second half of the speech. And it's a second half because we can only fit so much into our program before we go to break. Diane, just any responses you'd like to throw in there?
You know, one point that I did want to make is we have to remember when we are doing things like passing the Tribal Law and Order Act, which was so long in coming, that we are not, the federal government is not giving the tribes the authority to prosecute non-Indians or to increase sentencing. They're restoring that right, not giving it. Those were things that were taken away from us, and now slowly we're getting them back. And we have to protect those and use those that we get back and, you know, slowly rebuild to the active governments that we once were.
Sure. And I know a lot of people, when they look at a new administration, sometimes it's re-educating folks as to how Native Nations work and just almost what you asserted. I'm sure there's a lot of people who are looking forward to, you know, what the future holds. And a lot of people are looking at the work ahead. Let's go ahead and try Catherine one more time. She is in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Catherine, you're on air. Go ahead.
Hi there. I just wanted to say how inspiring that was and how I feel that it's such a wonderful service. Just to be able to hear that here in Santa Fe from Washington, it should be right side by side with the State of the Union. I just felt so privileged to hear the voice of that Native American elder person. So just to say, I just feel to strengthen the Native American way, Native American voice, and I'm a white person whose first ancestor came in 1635 to annihilate the Indians, and that has been a burden in my psyche. And so we're all in this together. We really are. Whether you came in 1635 or whether you were here for 10,000 years, now we're here together. And it's so important to hear the voice that I just heard. So thank you.
All right, Catherine, thank you for your call there in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And Diane, just hearing Catherine's thoughts, you know, sometimes when we get to the point where we're hearing the State of Indian Nations, it almost serves as kind of a reset, definitely a time to reflect on what kind of progress was made in the year that we are closing out. But that reset of thinking, you know, we're still here, we have these governments, and there are opportunities that tribes are looking to. Diane, anything else you'd like to share about how some of these words can set us forward into what's ahead, including this year?
Well, you know, as Catherine said, and as the president said, you know, when Native America succeeds, all of America succeeds. And I think with the economic and political success that many tribes have enjoyed, our neighbors have realized that. One leader here in Oklahoma said, we have become a factor in the community, and that is very true. And when that happens, that benefits everyone. We are all in this together.
All right. Thank you for that. And we also heard some of this echoed as more states take a look at their communities. We even heard it featured in the news of more people thinking about our Native nations with across the country. And I think this is a good reset, too, for our program here. A lot of things that I heard in the speech are things that we cover and things that we're looking forward to cover in the future. You know, when we talk about what our Native nations are facing. And that's going to wrap it up for today's discussion. And I do appreciate all the folks who joined us today, including stations across the nation. Also, thanks to our guests, Diane Hammonds, for joining us. And again, you can hear the entire State of Indian Nations address and congressional response on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. Also, thanks to the National Congress of American Indians for making this possible and reaching Brian Cladisby's words and sharing them with you today. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Our senior producer is Monica Brain. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. And Roman Garcia engineered our show today. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. And I'm Tara Gatewood, your host and producer. We will be back again on Monday with another program taking a look at Native health. If you'd like to reach out to us, please do. Send us an email, comments@NativeAmericaCalling.com. Thank you, and we'll meet you here on Monday.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support Native America Calling. Just use Pick, Click, Give, and select KNBA-FM, Kuwanic Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Hi, I'm Raina Thiel, White House liaison to American Indians and Alaska Natives. The health of Native people is important to me. With health insurance, you can get care anytime and anywhere you need it. I have health insurance, and I encourage you to sign up too. Visit healthcare.gov/tribal or call 1-800-318-2596. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Koyana.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kuwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.